the reason why queers love horror films so much is because, you know, the antagonist in most horror films is, you know, an outsider. Mm-hmm. You know, and most, you know, queer youth growing up, they're made to feel that way, you know, in one way or another. So I feel, you know, queer people really do love horror. And there's a lot of queer people working in horror.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, I never want to be a Disney princess, but I would love to be Maleficent.
A lot has happened to Austin drag queen Louisiana Purchase since her last appearance on the podcast. She recently wrapped up a hair-raising season of Dragula, the search for the world's next drag super monster. And she got married to the love of her life, Bulimian Rhapsody.
Lisi was apprehensive about the dynamics of being on a reality TV show. And while Dragula put her through the gauntlet, she's now a sultry, sexy she-devil reality TV star on motherfucking Netflix, bitches.
Today, drag legend Louisiana Purchase talks about Dragula, her drag community in Texas, her days living in Chicago, and marrying a drag queen in Vegas.
Plus, playing the theremin on her new album of experimental music.
How one drag queen with a bucket can make a fortune.
And show me the receipts. How to get a receipt for tipping a drag queen and expense the hell out of it.
Plus, all your questions. You don't want to miss this show. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello.
Hi, is this Louisiana Purchase?
It is.
Hi, Louisiana, it's Fausto.
How are ya?
I'm doing great. I love your Bacala bloody red devil dress.
Right? You did a great job.
You horny little she-devil.
Yes.
Where are you right now?
I am out running errands, picking up accessories for an outfit. I'm going to be performing in New Orleans. So I'm doing double duty. I'm shopping for accessories and looking around and
nice.
Doing everything at once. How's your day?
I'm doing great. We are getting all our Cooking with Drag Queens up on YouTube, and we have a...
Oh, nice.
There's a slot that's hot and ready for you.
Oh, how exciting. We're going to make cereal.
Well, we're going to make some really amazing stuff when you come to Chicago. But the last time we talked on the podcast was the day you found out that the Boulay brothers had invited you to come on Dragula.
Yes. Yeah. We did the podcast, and then I was to call them back. And, you know, let them know an answer. And I said, yes, obviously.
Do you remember how apprehensive you were about it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, not so much like the drag part. And I love the Boulays, and, you know the drag part excited me. It was the reality TV part that did not excite me all that much.
Why were you so apprehensive? Did you fear that you were going to be portrayed or seen in a negative light?
No, because not so much that. The thing that I guess frightened me the most, because, you know, you only get back what you give to those shows. So I knew I would go in and, you know, and just be myself, and, you know, I wouldn't be causing any drama. You know, I was there for the drag and for the competition, more so just the whole standum that comes with reality TV.
like the audience of the show can kind of forget the artistry of what you are about, and so they're just more interested in tying themselves to your fame.
Yeah, or believing that every single thing they see on TV is, you know, there's many more hours during the day that they don't have footage of. You know, it's a condensed version of reality, and it's not the, you know, entire reality. And that's how reality TV works. You're seeing like a synopsis, the best of, so to speak, you know, of the challenge of the day, of the days, you know. And some people can, you know, misconstrue things, but you know, I quickly realized, you know, like I said, you only get out what you put in. So I was like, I'll just be my authentic self and I shouldn't have anything to worry about. And quite honestly, you know, I love the season. I'm very proud of like what I brought. I wasn't an asshole.
Were you worried that you were going to come across as kind of obnoxious?
No, because that's not my personality. It's just, you know, it's no matter what you throw out there, you know, the viewing public will have their own opinions. And there's really nothing you can do about that.
Well, that's the thing about Dragula is that it's a show that, you know, they cast some really interesting artists, but also some great personalities.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that there was a rotten egg in your group, you know, like other reality TV shows where you see some of these contestants, you're like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in a prison cell with this person, you know?
Yeah, no, and I genuinely got along well with everyone on cast. So I enjoyed everyone and the drag that they brought.
Mm-hmm.
And thought that they were all amazing people and amazing competitors.
How do you describe Dragula to people who haven't seen the show, like to family members or ex-coworkers?
I tell them it's if you married the drag competition show with Fear Factor-esque style challenges, that's a good culmination of Dragula. It's in the world of drag, but really what it is at its heart is overcoming. And honestly, I feel like the main theme is like finding your own power as a mm-hmm. performer, and also like finding yourself. You know, the biggest competition you have on shows like this is yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point, I feel, of Dragula, is overcoming any and all obstacles to become your ultimate form.
This is my final form.
Right,
you're like
exactly.
The McDonald's Chicken McNuggets lady.
Exactly. She and I are the same person. That was just, I was in great illusion that day.
Well, you are actually not Satan's mistress, are you? You're actually a married woman now.
I am. I am a married lady. My partner and I got married shortly after coming back from filming Dragula. And it's been a whirlwind year, I tell you.
Bulimia and Rhapsody, one of my drag sisters. From
yes,
the
Bulimia and Rhapsody.
Poo Poo Platter.
Yeah, mother of the House of Poo Poo Platter.
And you guys got married in Vegas.
Yes, yeah, we got married in Las Vegas.
In a Mars Attacks-themed wedding chapel.
Yes, inside the Bally's, inside the Twilight Zone mini putt-putt at Bally's in Las Vegas. If anyone wants a good chapel recommendation, there you go.
How did it happen? Was it a spur-of-the-moment thing?
We traveled with the purpose of getting married. Yeah, he had proposed prior to me leaving for Dragula. And then Dragula happened, and it was like, well, okay, this is the year, I guess, you know. We're going to do a lot of amazing things. So I went and filmed Dragula and came home and had about a month's rest from that. And then we got married in Vegas in July.
I imagine that, you know, having a partner who is also a drag queen, who also has a good head on her shoulders, and, you know, you guys working together. I mean, I saw some of Bulimia and Rhapsody's wigs on you on Dracula.
Yes.
I was like, I recognize that wig.
It only helps. I mean, you know, Bulimia under, you know, knows what I'm going through and knows the particular pressures that drag can bring about. So it's like, we don't even really like have conversations about it anymore. We just kind of know. She's a great springboard, you know, for me to like throw ideas at and stuff like that. So it's been amazing. And then also like having, you know, being able to bring Bulimia into like the premiere in LA, that was so much fun. So Bulimia gets to, you know, enjoy some of the perks of me going on Dracula, which is nice.
When you first moved to Austin, was that sort of the beginning of your drag career, or did it happen someplace else?
It happened later. Uh-huh. I moved to Austin in 2011 and started drag in October of 2013.
Okay.
And yeah, I went, the first show I saw was a poo-poo platter show and was like, wow, this is drag. This is amazing. And shortly thereafter, my first performance was at a poo-poo platter show. So it just kind of, and once that happened, it just snowballed.
What, for people who are not familiar with the poo-poo platter, what is it about the community there and that environment that is so warm and appealing? Because it's, I participated in y'all's shows too, and there's just something really wonderful about the space you're creating that I have a hard time putting into words.
Yeah, we've cultivated an audience who appreciates and really welcomes just any and all forms of drag expression. They're there for it. The audiences that we've cultivated will go with us on whatever journey we kind of want to take them on. And they're just there to just like enjoy themselves, enjoy a show with no expectations. That's a breeding ground for like a lot of fun, exciting stuff. And Bulimia was the one who, you know, came into town all those years ago and kind of reintroduced alternative drag to Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just completely flourished since then. There's so many amazing drag shows that go on and so many amazing drag performers. And Bulimia and I both do multiple shows per month here in Austin. And it's a community that like, we celebrate each other's victories and genuinely enjoy working with each other.
Do you guys fight over costumes or anything like that?
No, because my costumes are smaller.
Because I imagine like with the Boulay brothers, I asked them and they're actually putting on their own makeup. And it's to me, like if my husband, just to apologize, Mark had to go to work today, but he's not able to be here. But we need to get you and your wife in here together into the kitchen. So we have like a double date. We'll make some nice sangria or something nice alcoholic.
Bulimia will just tell me, do what you usually do and go sit on the settee while I cook. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, Bulimia is the one who does all the cooking.
I clean the kitchen. She cooks. Yeah. Like I said, I can make you a bowl of cereal, perhaps. Or I can, you know, type in the order for Favor or Uber Eats. And that's how I cook.
Why are you so scared of cooking? Is it the knives?
Oh, I love knives. No, it's my fear of killing people with what I serve them.
Well, maybe a future challenge on Dracula is the eating your cooking.
Right. That could definitely be an extermination challenge, because who the hell knows what will happen with me in the kitchen.
You guys always have on Dracula something just, you know, spine chilling, goosebump raising challenge for the exterminations.
Yeah.
To me, it was interesting the way the show captured skydiving as this really terrifying thing.
Right.
Or getting electrocuted by playing in an oversized game of Operation. But the interesting challenge with you was that they were forcing or, you know, demanding that you staple money to your body. And that freaks you out.
It did. You know, I think they knew a lot of our kind of interior fears. You know, one for me is just, you know, just pain. And, you know, I do have a lot of tattoos. I've had piercings, but like I say on the show, you know, every time that happens, my blood sugar usually tends to drop. So I'm usually prepared with like candy and water. You know, I know what my body does. That particular day, I hadn't eaten. It was a really long shoot. I was corseted up to a 24-inch waist. And I knew when they said staple gun your leg, I was like, I'm in some fucking trouble. And
you showed me the scars of the staples.
Yeah,
it was intense.
all very real. The exterminations are very, very real. And yeah, it's, you know, you're basically faced with, you don't do this, you'll go home. So, you know, do you want to stay in this competition? And I did, you know, at that point, top five, there was no way I was, you know, going to let my fear stop me from moving forward. And, you know, I did the best I could do. I get asked about it all the time. So, you know, it was memorable TV. Thankfully, I looked pretty when I fainted. So there you go.
Was there any part of you that thought, you know, maybe this is going too far? This, I can't do this.
No. I knew that, you know, I think it was Drac who said pain is temporary. And you know, it was eventually, you know, it stopped hurting. The pride in doing something that I was very afraid of doing and then being rewarded by moving on to top four was, you know, it's true. You know, pain is very temporary. And I just remember, yeah, I went on to top four after that.
We were very expecting you to snatch the whole thing to win the crown.
Yeah, there's definitely some people who felt that they thought they saw me in top three. And, you know, I'm very proud of what I brought as far as my drag goes. And, you know, it is what it is. You can only do your best. And I felt I did my best. And, you know, and there it is. But I definitely was out to win for sure.
You said before that I treat stepping on the stage and performing a privilege. I treat it as if absolutely. It was the last time I'll ever be able to perform. When I'm on stage, I truly feel completely alive.
Exactly.
So I imagine the emotions that must have gone through your head when the stupid jack-o'-lantern
right
caused your little scroll to go glick, 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 glick down this into the abyss in this haunted house challenge.
And, right.
And that was it. You got sent home.
Yeah. Yeah. I get asked that all the time. Why the hell did you grab that damn pumpkin? So, you know, whenever I filmed, you know, without giving too much away, you know, we really weren't given instructions. They were just like, go to the haunted house. And so we did. And my hand knocked down the scroll. I saw the scroll fall. And I don't know if the viewing audience could, you know, really tell, but it was incredibly dark in there. So I couldn't see the scroll at all to try to grab it. So in my mind, I'm like, I didn't come all the way through this goddamn haunted house to leave empty handed. So I was like, I got the pumpkin. Just fucking, I'm taking this. I'll take anything that isn't nailed down and take it outside with me. I've got to grab something to show that I went through this thing.
What went through your mind when you saw the scroll fall down into the abyss?
In my mind, you know, there was like that split second, like, oh, well, that wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I just, you know, when you're in those situations, you know, I don't tend to like dwell on like negative stuff like that. I'm like, look, girl, you did it. You got the pumpkin. You got something in your hands and, you know, and you did it. And at that point, quite honestly, at top four, you know, it's kind of in the hands of the gods at that point, you know, once you're done with the extermination. And, you know, it was fun to film. I was genuinely scared. That one scene that people tend to comment on where I like stop and there's people behind me, it's because I genuinely felt like there were people behind me and I just stopped, just waited and then continued on. But
well, the thing about these haunted houses is that sometimes you think, you know, all it takes is one rotten egg to get in there and ruin your life forever. And it brings into question the trust that is implicit in theater, that you're not going to be hurt by the performers. And so you get into this haunted house, you're like, well, maybe I will get hurt by these people.
Yeah. Well, you know, they definitely like, they were not genteel with us. They threw those bags on our heads and that's why I ended up ball headed when they like ripped the bags off of our heads.
Shit.
It took my wig with it. And, you know, and we were like, had sheets thrown on us and we were lifted up by people. And, you know, it was a very physical haunted house, which, and we had no idea of what was gonna, you know, what was gonna go on once we were in there. So it was exciting. It was exhilarating, you know, genuinely scary to go through. But, you know, ultimately at the end, if you're on Dragula, you have some some horror loving blood flowing through your veins. So it was exciting for all of us.
Have you been able to tour and perform with your co-stars much?
Yeah, actually, this past for Halloween, we performed at the Dragathon in Boston that the Boulez host. And it was the top four, Dahlia, Priscilla, Landon, Cider, and myself, along with Violencia! Exclamation point. And it was so much fun to see them. I get to see them actually more often than I thought I would have. So that's always a nice surprise. I genuinely love all of my co-stars on season three. And any chance to work with them is always so fun. You know, it kind of feels like it's just a continuation of when we filmed, you know. We all got pretty close pretty quickly.
Well, there was a lot of tension between Dahlia Black. She's kind of the ingenue drag queen who certainly was a force to be contended with in the finale. I mean, that dress that she made by skinning the other contestants in a Buffalo Bill style.
Right.
that we were just like, our jaws were dropping for that.
Yeah, the faces on her mask were the Black House members. So it was Victoria Black and Opulence Black and Waka on the sides of all around her head.
That's so gruesome and so beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, that look was amazing. Dahlia also wore it for her performance in Boston this Halloween. And it's the costume itself is like such a joy to just look at because it's so well done. And it's so like gruesomely beautiful.
And then Priscilla Chambers, she's gone through hell and high water. And now she's come out as trans, as she's living her authentic self as a woman full time.
Yes. My drag daughter from the show.
That's right. She asked you to be her mommy and you said, all right, but I'm not giving you any child support payments.
Yeah. No money for you, honey. She made top three. I didn't. She could pay me.
Yeah.
Like I said, perform with her on Halloween. She's doing great. She looks great. Gave an amazing performance. So yeah, everyone that I've had contact with is doing well. We're as they say, hashtag booked and blessed, booked and cursed. I don't know what it would be for Dragula, but yeah, we're all working. We're, you know, all like getting our land legs back, you know, after the initial season airing on Amazon, you know, kind of getting out into the real world post season three of Dragula.
And of course the winner, the first drag king to be crowned in any television reality competition is Landon Cider.
Landon Cider is our king, our Dragula season three winner. Yeah, now I'm very excited, not only because just like what this means historically, you know, on a drag competition television show, you know, having a king be the winner and having drag kings represented by Landon, but not just that, because I know that, you know, he even said that during the reunion that that's not why he wants to do it. That's like a nice, you know, in addition to, but yeah, you know, his ambition and his artistry, his attention to detail is amazing. Like looking at these costumes that everyone saw on TV, like up close, it was mind boggling. Just like the time and dedication to craft, you know, I'm so proud of him. He did an amazing job.
Well, that's the thing about a lot of you guys is for you guys is drag is this essential part of your life. And then in some ways you guys, define yourselves and your existence through this artistry.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like I said, you know, doing drag and being on stage is what, you know, makes me feel alive. And I think that's true for all of us. You know, there's some intrinsic joy and like deep need to do drag, to perform. And, you know, you look at all the contestants on season three across the board, we all very much have our own aesthetic. You know, it's like a great like hall of supervillains, you know, when we're all lined up there, you know, everyone kind of, you know, has their own definite aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that's always inspiring to see.
And, you know, I think also the show really benefited from having cisgendered or non-binary assigned female at birth women like Hollow Eve. and Landon on the show. It just kind of, it made it feel more a reflection of the community that we occupy.
Exactly. It definitely represented the things that I see, I know, in my own queer community here in Austin. You know, shows here, it's, you know, we have AFAB performers, we have non-binary performers, we have trans performers. And to see that reflected, you know, on a TV show, I'm very proud to be a part of that.
And so where are you? You have such this wonderful punk aesthetic that we've always admired. Have you, and Austin, Texas is a town for the, you know, garage bands. And yeah. He talks about starting and you were been have a background in music journalism. And yeah. He talks about starting a band.
No band, but I'm actually in the process of finishing up a 12 track album. I play theremin.
Ooh, that's that yes. instrument. That goes, ooh. The
50s sci-fi instrument, as most people know it. But yeah, I'm doing a really fun instrumental album, hoping to come out with it in the fall of 2020. You know, a nice mood appropriate album. There's going to be no fucking dance bops, no buy my single on iTunes, ding. Kind of shenanigans going on, but it'll just be another extension of my drag.
So it's going to feel more like a performance, like an audio expression of a live performance than an album.
Pretty much. It definitely is going to be more of like an atmospheric kind of thing that you put on and like listen to, and also it'll give me a chance then I can incorporate some of these songs and play theremin live during my sets in addition to drag.
Because that's what I feel a lot of industrial pop stars and drag queens are going in this direction of having a evening experience in a theater as opposed to doing something that takes place in a bar with other distractions.
Exactly.
And, you know, the idea of seeing you sort of, you know, this she-devil, this gorgeous, luscious she-devil pull out a theremin and take us into this, you know, horror world, very Addams Family aesthetic that you have, sounds really delightful.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the goal to work towards, you know. I went to art school and studied visual arts, studied music, and you know, the end goal is to incorporate all your love. So to have like an amazing, like dark burlesque, like evening with Louisiana Purchase that kind of like as a culmination of like all of my like separate loves into one, and also something that I can curate with other performers. Mm-hmm. It, you know, is kind of like, you know, like the end goal to everything, you know, the album and everything else, just to tie it all nicely into a fun package, you know. And also, you know, it offers someone different than just, you know, let's go see, you know, the Queen Buck at, you know, our local, you know, Ricky's on the Tavern. I don't know, you know, like some bullshit, which there's nothing wrong with that. I love doing club dates, but being able to be in a theater and present like an entire evening's worth of entertainment is a really fun, delicious project.
What do the Boulay brothers look like out of drag? Because this is a question everyone asks me, and I feel so bad because I've actually seen them out of drag, but wasn't aware. Like I was in an elevator with them, and I'm just talking to them, you know, like as they were friendly, and they were like the other day they were like, I think it was Swanthula was like, "You didn't even recognize me out of drag," and I was like, "I do not recognize them out of drag at all."
Oh my god! Well, they are two human being males. One is much taller than the other, and they both like to wear a lot of black. That's what they look like out of drag.
I always joke that there used to be one Boulay and then an angry drag queen cut off her head and like a Hydra two grew out.
And two grew out. Oh my god. Yeah, I've had the pleasure of being able to hang out with Swan and Drag, all of us outside of drag, and they're two very super fun, enjoyable people, super smart, super creative. And I know anytime I get to kind of like have an out of drag kiki with them is always a big enjoyment for me.
Well, that's the thing, is a lot of people think they're, you know, new to the scene or whatever, but they're for 15 years they've been doing these Dracula shows, and the TV series evolved from that.
Yeah, they had Miss Kitties in New York, and then they, you know, and then they moved to Los Angeles, and, you know, Dracula was an event, like you said, a monthly party, and, you know, and then they parlayed that into Queen Kong, which has gone on for years. And no, yeah, they've definitely have evolved and have been around for quite a while.
Do you feel like the show is able to capture this subversive quality of drag that other reality TV shows don't do?
More so than any other one, I would say absolutely. I mean, you know, there's only so much you can show on TV. You know, there are, you know, if people want to find it, there's some, like, you can see some real subversive stuff if you, you know, poke your nose around. You know, and to a point, you know, there's only so much you can actually show on television. But as far as, like, shining a light on those outer corners of drag, Dracula does do that. More so than any other show.
It seems like there's a really strong queer appeal to horror. This Addams Family values that film captured. And I think Dracula is like right there aligned with it.
Yeah. The reason why queers love horror films so much is because, you know, the antagonist in most horror films is, you know, an outsider. You know, and most, you know, queer youth growing up, they're made to feel that way, you know, in one way or another. So I feel, you know, queer people really do love horror. And there's a lot of queer people working in horror. And, you know, and also, like, for me, you know, I never want to be a Disney princess, but I would love to be Maleficent, you know.
What is the attraction to being this, what is Maleficent? She's the
villainess of Sleeping Beauty.
But she was rejected by the other fairies and the court, and that's why she was so angry at them all.
Exactly, you know, and that's what, you know, horror is all about. It's, you know, in some way, shape, or form, someone like facing or dealing with rejection or loss in some way, and you know, the darkness that can happen when someone is put in a situation like that.
How do you keep, like, you know, bullying or elitism from gripping and creating a toxic environment in your drag community?
Well, the thing is, you know, a lot of the majority of the drag performers, especially like in my circles, we hang out outside of drag a lot. We all live in relative close proximity to one another. And as a matter of fact, the apartment complex I live in, there's five other drag performers that I perform with pretty regularly that live in the same complex.
Oh, you live in Chick-fil-A Show's apartment complex?
Yes, I do.
Oh, shoot. And no wonder you guys all seemed like you were all up late night. I was like, oh, she's just basically a couple of doors down.
Yeah, I'm like five steps down. But yeah, no, we actively hang out with one another. And also, like, you know, actively really, you know, we shoot ideas back and forth. And, you know, that's a big part of my life, is like hanging out with like my fellow drag performers and us, like, you know, bouncing ideas off of one another and like inspiring one another. That's, you know, to me, that's what is fun about drag.
I really love your community. I consider myself a part of it, even though I don't live in Austin. You know, it's like, that's one of the things I absolutely adore doing every time I'm down there, is performing with you guys, because it's such a, and I, if anybody's listening out here who's thinking about taking a vacation, go to Austin, go see Bulimium Rhapsody and Chick-fil-A shows and Louisiana Purchases shows, because there really are something to behold and to experience and participate in.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we definitely want to create and cultivate a welcoming atmosphere, you know, for anyone who wants to see drag.
And what do you think about my drag?
you saw me perform. Your drag is Chick and Bulimian are like, if anyone was made for this show, And in our canon, it is you.
Oh, you mean that you think that I would be a good contestant on Dragula?
You like to staple gun your leg?
You know, that's the thing. I was like, I don't have any tattoos. I don't have any piercings, but I'm not against any of all that stuff. And, you know,
right.
Like, a lot of people think of me as this, like, the guy who does Cooking with Drag Queens, the guy who does the podcast. But, like, I have a background in Austin, Texas, and doing drag and in a punk background. And so for me, it's like, I think it's very exciting and thrilling. I just don't know if I would be able to deliver all those looks at a snap of a finger, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of those looks, like my trash queen look, I made it the night before.
That's astounding.
You get thrown a lot of curveballs, which does make the whole thing exciting.
Was this kind of like being back in art school?
It definitely was. It very much felt like being back in art school. And it's like, you know, your floor show is what you present, and then you wait for the critique. You know, it very much felt like I was back in art school.
Was it better than art school in some sense of in terms of the feedback you got from the judges?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The Boules are not there they want to see everyone succeed and do their best. We were cast because they thought we were all great performers. So it's not like they want to see you fail. You know, I'm sure they would much rather have very hard deliberations because everyone did amazing.
It was heartbreaking to see Yovska go home, and you were so good at, you know, this sweet young drag queen was really upset by that, and you were so paternal to her, comforting her. It was really great to watch.
I really adore Yovska, and I love their drag so much. Drag queens like to put on, you know, a certain type of persona sometimes, you know, and be very kind of like detached and, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of bitchy. But, you know, I'm sorry. At the end of the day, I'm a human being. And when I see someone like really deeply hurt and sad and crying, you know, I'm gonna try to console them the best I can and try to offer comfort. And I think any human being would be moved to do that. You know, for me, you know, that's like the most natural course for me is to like comfort someone when they're hurt. And yeah, no, I'm never too cool for fucking school. I don't care about like losing face or what have you for comforting someone. That's like, you know, that's what we're here for. Just as at the end of the day, as human beings, is to offer, you know, comfort to one another.
We have some great questions from the audience. I want to get to some of them for you. Sweet, okay. Gwendolyn, who is your gal pal in Austin, she wants to know about your connection to RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars winner, Alaska Thunderfuck. I remember her saying that Alaska had once told her that she had felt a real connection to her because they both had drag names named after states.
Yeah, years ago, don't even ask me the year because I smoke way too much weed. But Alaska was in a short film called Nasty, filmed here in Austin, and I was in the film as well. And Alaska also did a month-long stint in San Antonio performing in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So we got to hang out quite a lot, and I thoroughly enjoy Alaska. She's so much fun and so kind.
Jose Alberto Guzman Colon, the photographer.
Yes.
He's wanting to know what was going on through your mind when you grabbed the pumpkin. I think that you clarified it as that you were like wanting some kind of artifact from there.
I knew we were supposed to grab something, so I was not about to leave without something in my hands.
What'd you do with the pumpkin? Did you eat it?
I just handed it to him. I was like, here, take it. I grabbed it. I don't know what you want, but here you go. I grabbed the fucking pumpkin.
So there was a bit of like confusion on what the task at hand was.
A touch, yes.
You're like, I don't know what the crazy show is. I just do whatever the weird bald ladies tell me to do.
Exactly. When they say jump, I'm like, how high?
Would you have jumped out of the airplane?
You know what? If that was what was required, I would have probably passed out whenever they like jumped out of the plane, but I would have been out of the plane.
Leah Hansen, where in the UK are you most excited to come for the January UK tour? You guys are going to go to London.
Yes, we're going to, I think the it's 7 dates, and it's Amsterdam, Berlin, Paris, Glasgow, Dublin, Manchester, and London.
How glamorous is that?
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. I finally got to go to London this past August for Drag World UK. And I did a burlesque gig in Kent at the Loco Cabaret. And that was amazing. So I'm very excited to go back. I'm excited to go back to London. I fell in love with that city. It was so much fun. But I'm definitely excited to visit all of those places because I've never been to any of them.
Who has the best food?
Who has the best food?
Yeah, like when you're traveling in Europe, who, where do you, what are you looking for to stick in your mouth?
Just bring me to Paris where I could eat just like bread and cheese and like gain 15 pounds before we leave.
I know, just sitting in those cafes, I could, and just go through those bakeries. They're legendary. Right? Yeah.
I'll take all of that, please. Thank you. Sugars and carbs and cheese, dairy and carbs.
I like it when the sexy, sweaty Parisian is sticking a baguette underneath his armpit and riding on the bicycle.
I believe that's called seasoning your bread. I don't know.
Who dat wants to know, why are you so perfect? Seriously, I want to know which of the Dragula queens you are closest to. Probably all of them, right?
Yeah, no, I stay in contact with all of the contestants. I'm really close with Eva because she lives in Texas and I physically get to see her.
Eve of Destruction.
Yeah, Eva Destruction.
She's yeah, the one with the hairy legs.
Yeah, she's got a
beast.
She's got a nice covering of fur all over her body.
She has a Just for Fans site where you can see everything.
Well, totally do.
Yeah. I think this, I guess one of the first Dragula queens who sort of like, you know, has leveraged that into a very lucrative career for as an erotic model.
Ooh. Well, yeah. Come on, Eva. I'm going to borrow some money from you. But no, yeah, I love them all. Like I get along with them very well. And I've worked with quite a few of them since the show has aired, and in the future we will be working together as well. For December, I know we'll have Jovska in Austin, so I'm excited to see her again.
Tristan Aikito Yagami wants to know, what is the drag scene in Austin like, and how does one get started here? I'm asking for myself because I want to participate. I just moved here 2 months ago.
The best kind of how I came up, go to the shows you want to be in drag, go up to the producers, say, hi, my name is, I'm new here, I would love to do drag. In Austin, you're supported by support team. So that's my best course of advice for anyone wanting to break into drag in Austin. We're all very nice. We love like seeing new performers, new talent. But yeah, come to a show in drag. That's the key, kids. Come in drag. Put some effort in and come say hi. We're all very friendly. I love meeting new performers. I love seeing the new talent that comes into our city.
You know, one queen that really struck a chord with me is Miss Ann Thorpe.
Yes.
Who's a baker.
Yes.
Works as a professional baker. And her
makeup.
A very good. Have you had her bread?
Not her bread, but she's made me a cake and it's very good.
Oh, that's fascinating. She was so lovely and so wonderful and just had this really wild aesthetic. Have the producers of Dragula sort of been looking and asking for recommendations for future seasons from you?
Not yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know that they're always looking. They always kind of try to have their fingers on the pulse, and they're like, you know, always, you know, looking at new drag performers. So yeah, like
it's hard because you know you're touring, you're working on your television show, which is a full time job.
Yeah,
and then you know, in order to keep your fingers on the pulse, you have to go out there and interact with people, and sometimes you know. Some not all drag shows are fun, or not everything is a pleasure.
I say my best piece of advice is, especially with social media, to curate your Instagram as if the world was watching it.
Like add people onto Instagram that you, I don't quite understand what that means though.
Like your Instagram feed, like always, like every aspect of your drag, your social media, your costuming should be at all times curated to the best of your ability as if the entire world was watching you. Because you never know who is watching you, sure. And you never know what opportunities might come up just through your social media. So that's what I always tell everyone, like, have an aesthetic, have a brand, have your social media together, like, you know, be, for lack of a better word, be kind of pageant ready at all times.
Lauren Crabtree, great name, Lauren.
Yeah.
Your drag, Louisiana, your drag frequently overlaps with burlesque. And there's a common problem at shows featuring both drag and burlesque performers where audiences feel more inclined to tip the former than the latter. I believe this is at least partially as a result of the pushing to separate burlesque from club stripping. What can event hosts and performers do to encourage the audience to tip their burlesque stars?
Actually, there's a great way to do that. If you would like to tip your burlesque performers, what I suggest to burlesque producers and to audiences is the bucket system. Have little buckets along the edge of your stage. And if you want to tip a performer, just put your money in the bucket. You don't, they do not need to take the money from your hand in order to appreciate it. A lot of burlesque performers in particular, as well as a lot of drag performers, we have numbers that we have beats we want to hit, gags we want to do, and we want to show our appreciation by taking the tip, but it interferes with the flow of the number. So we are always recommending that if you want to tip, just throw the money in the bucket. It's like, you know, some people feel that that's rude. It is not. We see you putting the money in, we're appreciative, but we also want to give you a really amazing performance. So that's the way that I found.
I had this one drag queen, I tipped her at a show, and then later on social media, she was going around saying that I hadn't tipped her. And I was like, I want a receipt. You know, part of it is like, you know, tipping people is a very intimate and personal thing. And also some drag performers pay attention to see if you are tipping them or not. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. Sometimes the tipping system it seems like it's an imperfect way to support this art.
Yeah. One other thing that we do as well is at some shows, the performer's Venmo gets announced and you can tip them via Venmo. You don't have to like disrupt any performance.
Does that work?
It does work, actually. It really does. Because a lot of times now, like, people don't have cash on them. So it's, you know, anyone they want to, you know, tip, it's a nice way that they could do it that way. But yeah, I really think the bucket system is nice because the audience get to tip. They feel, you know, like they've, you know, shown appreciation that way to the performer. And then the performer feels a freedom with, you know, for not having to like collect a tip from everyone.
So you're putting together an album, you're putting together a show, you're going to UK, you're bringing your wife along. Wow. What an amazing year you're going to have.
Right. I've got some very exciting things coming up that I don't believe in like jinxing a project until it's ready to go out the door. But I do have some really exciting things that I can't wait to share with everybody. And 2020 is going to be a great year.
Louisiana Purchase, is it Wheezy or is it Lulu? Settle it once and for all.
I go by a myriad of names as long as that check is written out correctly.
Call me Legion, for we are many.
Exactly.
I love you so much. Please come cook with us here in Chicago.
Absolutely.
It's a delight talking to you always. I'm so happy that you're on Dragula and the world is getting to see what we've already known, what an extraordinary, sexy she-devil you are. So was it Amanda Lepore that called you pussy? Like...
The thing was, so it was during that episode, but it was the other guest judge, the actress from The Nun. She was like, where's the gore? you know, you look beautiful, but where's the gore? And then I sit in the confessional, you know, she may have asked where the gore was, but Swan said, I'm pussy.
And pussy you are, darling.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Wheezy.
Absolutely. That was so much fun.
I love you so much. I look forward to seeing you in Austin.
Absolutely. See you soon.
Take care, love.
Okay, you too, babe.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Louisiana Purchase lives in Austin, Texas. She's touring the UK. Check out Dragula. It's now on Netflix. No ads, which is really great. I want to say to you guys how deeply grateful I am for the podcast and for the opportunity to do this show and interview such amazing people like Louisiana Purchase from Dragula. Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of incredible, fierce people, fantastic people just like you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and access thousands of legendary podcasts with many of the world's top drag stars and some ingenues and underground artists you may not know, but you'll be glad you discover them. If you do become a member, write to us at mail@feastoffun.com and talk about your interests. We love to hear from you. And of course, follow us on social media at Feast of Fun everywhere, where you can chime in and ask questions for future guests. I'm going to leave you here with Peter Pringle on the theremin playing Over the Rainbow. Enjoy. Thanks for listening to Feast of Fun. I'm Fausto Fornos. Bye-bye.